Where's that great music that the TV show The Bachelor stole from us? My guest is Dr. Jack Russell Weinstein. He's a Chester Frist Distinguished Professor of Philosophy at the University of North Dakota, and he joins us periodically about once a month for Philosophical Currents. Jack, they stole our thunder on The Bachelor with taking your great music pick here.
I'm a trendsetter. What can I tell you?
We have a fun and interesting and thought-provoking topic ahead of us today. Jack, we're going to talk about death bots, and maybe perhaps a little better stated, digital immortality. Do we really want to live forever as AI? And as we start our discussion, Jack, I thought I would lay a definition out there about what a death bot might be. And here's my take. A death bot is an AI-powered digital replica of a deceased person created using their voice recordings, text messages, emails, social media posts, and other digital data. And those bots are then designed to simulate, I guess, the personality, speech patterns, and conversational style of the deceased, allowing loved ones or others to interact with that virtual version of the deceased person forever. Jack?
Well, the first thing that I would point out is that this is not living forever. You're dead and your consciousness is gone and you're not experiencing anything because of the AI. This is entirely about the relationship that the living people have with your memory. And so what AI does is simulate who you are, adopts your speech patterns, adopts your mannerisms, adopts your memories, so to speak, and they can have conversations with you and communicate with you or with a copy of you to make them feel better or more connected or to wash themselves in your memory. So anytime anyone advertises this as living forever, that's a misrepresentation because it doesn't affect you in any way. It's all about the people who survive you.
So what ethical concerns do you see out there if, for example, I'm in my later years. Maybe I have onset of dementia, but my wife had passed away and I want to continue conversing with her AI bot. Is that a bad thing, Jack?
Well, I don't know if we can say it's bad or good in any blanket fashion. I think that it's complex. Obviously, there are privacy issues for the person who has passed away. If you feed the AI their letters, their emails, their diary, all of that sort of stuff, then something that was private becomes public. And people's reputations are at stake and people's memory are at stake. And so you have to be careful about what you're taking from the deceased and whether or not they would want that. Additionally, in an instance of dementia in particular, if you as the person engaging with the AI bot can't tell the difference between who they are and who they're supposed to be, between the fact that it's an AI and a real person, then that can be very confusing. It can be very overwhelming. It can interfere with grief. And so one of the things that it does is mess with people's sense of reality and mess with their agency. They don't get to fully have closure in the loss. And that can be harmful in the long term.
You talk about consent. Something like this can move forward, and I anticipate fully that it will. What, should I deal with this in my will, saying that I authorize no one to use my name, image, and likeness, so to speak, in this context?
Oh, absolutely. We are in a brave new world, and AI is introducing all sorts of things that we couldn't imagine 20 years ago. And that includes reproducing images. The Hollywood strike from last year or 2 years ago, however long it was very much about this, was about the use of AI and creativity and the likenesses that stars have copyrighted. If you are Taylor Swift or whomever, someone can make millions and millions of dollars off of your image. And so you want to make sure that your kids or your survivors have that copyright power. So absolutely, this is something that we have to anticipate. We have to put it in our wills. We have to communicate with our loved ones in advance. Our digital lives live on so much past what we've ever expected, even just a Facebook account. I have a handful of friends who've passed away and their Facebook accounts are still online. And on the anniversary of their death, people post messages and things like that. But imagine if someone got a hold of that or was able to infiltrate they could imitate, they could pretend, they could really mess with people's lives, and they could mess with people's well-beings. And so we have to start thinking about our digital shadow the way we start thinking about everything else.
Jack, as you consider this topic, are there positive uses that come to mind? We call them death bots, which sounds so evil to me, or at least I have called them death bots. But are there any positive from this that can help people, maybe help them with the grieving process? Or would that, again, be so confusing and overwhelming? Is there a role for these that can be positive for humanity?
I think there's a lot of positivity that comes out of it. I know that they're very popular right now in China, and that's where the vast majority of innovation is coming from in terms of the death bots. But I've lost people that I've wanted to talk to. I've lost people that I've talked to, you know, just meditatively myself as I'm walking down the street, or I've written letters to, or things like that. And what the AI does is help you relive that experience. You can find this, for some people, this can be a very healing experience. It can be cathartic. It can give you a sense of intimacy. It can allow you to remember the good times. And hearing someone's voice who's passed away can be very moving and very soothing. This really depends on the person. Again, I'm reluctant to make any blanket statements, because for some people, this could be a very healthy way of going down memory lane, and for talking to somebody and asking their advice and going through their day as if it were a diary, as if they were reflecting on their own thoughts. The important thing to remember is that it is an AI and that it is a pretend. And so as long as the user knows the difference between fiction and reality and knows the difference between who they are and who the AI is, then it has the potential to be very healthy.
Jack, from a philosopher's standpoint, what does the creation of this, or the idea to create these AI replicas of us, say about our relationship with first life, right? There's no reason why we couldn't create this before we die, but then maybe about death and memory, like you've kind of touched on.
Well, first of all, the great philosophical question is, what is consciousness? We don't know what consciousness is. We don't know if we are, if our brain is creating this artificial us that is equivalent to an AI. You've seen a lot of science fiction films where they download people's brains. We don't know if that's possible, and we don't know what it means to be us. And so when we have a replica of us, it's very hard to distinguish between the real person communicating and the robot replicating the voice. We also, as human beings, struggle with the idea of death, and we struggle it in two very important ways. First, as people who are mortal, we don't know what's going to happen, and we're very insecure, and we're scared of it in most instances. And that's one of great life's mysteries. But we also struggle with the permanence of other people's death. You know, when someone dies, the first day that it happens is horrible and traumatic. But the second and the third and the fourth, those are worse, because that's when you really have to deal with the consequences of the permanence. And you have to deal with the fact that this person isn't coming back. There's no turning back the clock. There's no ghosts, as far as we know. And they're just gone. And that vast emptiness, that vast insecurity, that vast coldness and loneliness is one of the things that make human beings different from other animals. And so what the AI bot tries to do is fill that hole. What the AI bot tries to do is take away the feeling of permanence and that coldness and that loneliness, to give someone the sense that you're still around. So this is both about fear and about comfort. It's about preserving the memory of someone, but also of trying to be in the world and trying to have a sense of normalcy and retain the past in a way that we absolutely couldn't do in any form until this happened.
We're enjoying our monthly Philosophical Currents conversation with Dr. Jack Russell Weinstein. He's a Chester Fritz Distinguished Professor of Philosophy and Director of the Institute for Philosophy and Public Life at the University of North Dakota. And Jack, you, more so than most all of us, have a digital footprint out there. You host this, or you visit with me monthly, and my predecessor, Ashley, in Philosophical Currents. All that digital likeness, I guess, of your voice exists. You also host a monthly radio show right here on Prairie Public. It's called Why? Philosophical Discussions About Everyday Life. Does this at all, this concept of now being able to have Jack maybe not live, but be an AI version of himself for a long time, does this at all alter anything that you would do in your normal life today, recognizing that whatever you do, Jack, may be used against you here, I guess is the way I would describe it?
That's a really interesting question, because I have already contemplated the idea of what do we do with all this stuff once we stop broadcasting? Do I leave money in my will to make sure that it stays on the web? Do I want this to be retained as an archive for as long as possible? And I probably do. So I would like my work to stand, and I would like in 20 years and 30 years and 40 years, people to be able to find these interviews that I've done with you and with the great philosophers so that they can study them and so they can listen to what the great questions were in 2025 and 2015, as opposed to it just disappearing into the ether. The idea that someone could take all of that and make a artificial Jack who might interview people, that's a little bizarre. And I don't know. That makes me feel
It's very weird.
I don't like the idea of things being attributed to me that I didn't do. It's hard enough to be held accountable for the things that I did do, right? But to be held accountable for things that I didn't say, or I didn't, questions I didn't ask, or approaches I didn't make, that's pretty scary. And I think that I wouldn't feel comfortable with the AI Jack out there continuing Y Radio after I was gone. Because I don't think people can tell the difference between an AI you and a real you. And I think that part of what makes the conversations interesting to listeners is how my brain works and how I connect A through B and the questions that you ask and the way that I think about answering. And AI doesn't do that. AI doesn't think. This is really important, and this is what people don't understand. As of right now and for the immediate future, artificial intelligence is not intelligence. It isn't a thinking machine. What they use is language models where they calculate what the next likely word is in the list of all possible words. And they do, I don't know exactly how it works, and the technical stuff is beyond me, but basically they'll have a word and then they'll look at the statistics for what the likeliest word is to follow, and they'll put that in. And this is not thinking. This is not contemplation. This is not consciousness at any level. This isn't even reasoning. What it is a math trick that is wrong as often as it is right. And these AI results that we get at the top of Google searches, for example, they look like they're right, but they're often not. I've had students who've had used ChatGPT for papers, and ChatGPT will make up citations. They'll just talk about articles that don't exist and authors that don't exist. And it's one of the ways that you catch students cheating. So the AI Jack wouldn't be a thinking creature. It wouldn't be a reasoning, rational, conscious entity. It would be a math trick. And so it wouldn't even be able to capture the spirit of Jack. And so I wouldn't feel comfortable someone using that voice and confusing listeners about the difference between who I am and who the AI is.
Here's something else that I've contemplated. I touched on it a moment ago with saying, well, hey, look, this could happen in your real life, not just after you die. And I recall an article that I've read in the New York Times about a Facebook experience. I have never used, I'll state now, Meta's virtual reality glasses. But apparently you can immerse yourself, as this New York Times reporter did over a week, into these AI worlds and be visiting then with these AI-generated replicas of maybe Jack Weinstein or maybe Craig Blumenschein today. What guardrails should we worry about, and how can we know that's probably not already being done?
Well, one of the things that we see from the behavior of the tech companies is that everything is about profit. And so one of the dangers, and this isn't a direct answer to your question, but one of the dangers with these AI robots is what happens if the company decides to put advertising in it. And so my daughter has a conversation with Dead Jack, and Dead Jack says, "Boy, I feel like having a Pepsi-Cola, and wouldn't it be great to go to Taco Bell?"
I've thought of all of these things exactly, yeah. Because you never went to Taco Bell. Your daughter knows that, but now here you are.
That's right. And so we have to remember that all of these things that they're doing are not for the good of humanity. They're for the profit margin. And when Facebook creates images of people, they're doing it to make money and to exploit the people. And so we absolutely need guardrails for, like, copywriting your own image. We should be born with a copyright of our own image. People should be required to give permission before they use voices and images and technology for commercial purposes. And also, which Jack are they going to use? Are they going to use the Jack when I was 30? Are they going to use the Jack when I was 50? Does my daughter get to decide how old she wants her father to be when she communicates? Can she change the image? And what if it's a point in my life when I was suffering? Or what if it's a point in my life when I wasn't happy? I want my daughter to be happy, and I want her to have a lifelong relationship with my memory. But the longer she holds on to the past and the more she relies on the artificial nature of what they've made me, the more she's subject to the manipulations of other people, the more agency she loses. And so we have to regulate these AI images, and we have to create ethical rules and legal structures to give everyday people the tools to fight back, because it's getting harder and harder and harder. There's a whole discussion in Europe about the right to be forgotten, which is the idea that you can demand, according to the EU, that Google removes links to certain articles, like if 20 years ago you were arrested for something and you've had a good record ever since. There are ways to request that Google removes links to those things. Ultimately, I think it's impossible, but it's an attempt to recognize this right that you have over your own history and your own story. And so what we need to do is figure out how these AI images and replicas are interfering with our stories and way that we as individuals can fight back. And ultimately, that's going to be a legal battle. Ultimately, that's going to be government regulation and lawyers fighting with lawyers. And of course, the poor people are going to have less access to that. The marginalized people are going to have less access to that. The rich people will be safer, but of course the rich people will also be more famous and more subject to exploitation in that sense.
Wondered a couple things. That number one, is your daughter going to be presented with this nice advertisement in the mail 2 weeks after Jack's gone, or my kids 3 weeks after I'm gone, saying for $29.95 a month you can interact with your father? Just pay now, and we'll, as long as you pay us, we'll give that resource to you. And then secondly, talking about younger people here, do you think they view this differently than we do, Jack, because of the way they've grown up with technology, which is, I'll be the first to admit, very different than the way I grew up and enjoy technology today?
You know, I absolutely think that 2 weeks after I die, she'll get those advertisements. And that's when she's the most vulnerable. And that's when she's going to agree to something that maybe is the worst thing for her. People need grieving time. People need period to be a period of meditation and reflection. And for some people, that's 6 months. For some people, that's 2 years. And it depends how close they are, it depends to their parents, how meaningful they are. Imagine losing a child and the idea of having your child back, and you get this advertisement. You can continue to talk to your child for the next 10 years if you want. I mean, what you'd be willing to pay in your grief for that is exploitative. So I think that is very, very scary and very dangerous. I teach a media ethics class, and one of the things that is becoming very clear, it's the first time I'm teaching it, is that in many respects, my students are more sophisticated than the things that we're reading. That kids who've grown up with this technology and grown up with computers understand social networks and understand virtual reality and understand the manipulation in ways that us older folks don't. And so I do think that the younger people are going to have a different relationship with this and that they may be more comfortable with this, but it also means that they don't know anything but this and they don't have an alternative. And if you are raised in an environment where the dead are always with you, you don't know what it's like to lose them, and you don't know which is better for you. And so, like all great technological change, the impact that this has on the next generation is incredibly powerful and unavoidable. And you can't get outside that perspective. My daughter can't not have grown up with computers. They are essential parts of her, and she can't see otherwise, and she might not be able to see the virtue of an analog life, the virtue of journaling, the virtue of sitting in a park bench and talking to my memory without hearing my memory talk back. And those might be really valuable skills to have that we need to cultivate in the new generation so that the analog life and so that the life of loss and limitation is preserved.
Jack, we have just about a minute left, but I wonder, relative to things we should be thinking about today, and this is with policymakers and others, that these tools, if you call them tools, can be used to manipulate agendas. In other words, it almost goes back to the Taco Bell idea that we talked about earlier. If I have an agenda, then I can create Craig Blumenstein's likeness, have him interact with others just like they used to, but then slowly introduce kind of where I want to steer people. That to me is just so scary, but probably real.
Oh, it's very scary and very real. Imagine if the company starts advocating for a particular political candidate, and now the memory of your father or the memory of your spouse or the memory of your of whomever is bringing up this candidate, how good this candidate is and what this candidate is going to do for you. How do you counter that? How do you avoid being influenced by the memory of someone who was so important to
Dad
you?
Dad said, this guy's good. Come on.
Yeah. And if you can't remember that Dad isn't Dad, it makes it even worse.
So much to think about. It's digital immortality has been our topic. Do we really want AI to make us, in air quotes now, live forever as AI? My guest has been Dr. Jack Russell Weinstein, a Chester Fritz Distinguished Professor of Philosophy and Director of the Institute for Philosophy and Public Life at the University of North Dakota. And of course, he's the great host of the public radio show we air monthly on Prairie Public, Why? Philosophical discussions about everyday life. Jack, it's always a pleasure.
I love it every time. Thanks so much, Craig.
Like Barry and his voice got bass. A body like Arnold with a Denzel face. He's smart like a doctor with a real good rep.